FW Presents, Panel by Panel, the show that dissects a single comic book panel from the last 85 years of comics history each episode. I'm Siskoid, and our panelist today is the workhorse of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, Rob
Ryan
Kelly.
Ryan Daly's here?
No, no. Wait. Well, yeah, recently Ryan's really been, you know, putting his shoulder to the grindstone, if that's an expression. But normally, Rob Kelly, you're the man who has... quite a lot of the shows, you know, and you're featured
he says
a lot.
Begrudgingly.
You've got several weekly slots, which none of us can really say the same.
You're welcome.
Thank you for all the content. So you've accepted the challenge to allow the randomizer to decide what we're going to be talking about.
I have.
So this is a randomized series of choices using a database of available comic book materials, either physical or digital. Prior to the recording, we rolled up a year, a month, a comic that was on the stands that month, a page, and finally a panel, the discrete unit of comic book storytelling. So in this case, we rolled the year 1967, the month of January. Now, among the 129 comics out that month, according to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, the revolving finger fell on Charlton's Fightin' Five, number 41. Page 25 of 25, which makes it the Peacemaker backup story. Story by Joe Gill with art by Pat Boyette. Now let's see. Panel 3 of 4, which you'll find in the show notes at fireandwaterpodcast.com. Before we get into it, Rob, did you expect a Charlton comic? And did you have any history with the Fightin' Five or the Peacemaker strip or anything like that?
Nobody expects Charlton comics. No, the randomizer is really doing its job here because this is definitely random. I have very little experience with Charlton when Charlton was an ongoing thing, simply because they were so hard to find. You know, I didn't they didn't appear very much in my local newsstands. In fact, there was really only one location that ever had them at all, and they didn't even have them regularly, and it was a tobacco slash, you know, newsstand. It's the place where I got the spinner rack that I own, and they had a much larger assortment of magazines and stuff like that, and they would get Charltons, but that was pretty much the only time I ever saw them. And I'll admit I didn't buy them much when I did see them, because, you know, they did war and romance. They were still doing romance comics into the 80s and stuff. So, I mean, they just didn't appeal to me as much. But yeah, I don't have a lot of experience with this title. What I know of this character really is mostly from his years as a DC character.
It's interesting that you only found them in a tobacco shop, because I have the same memory. The very first place where I ever bought American comics. So my first comics in my collection all come from this tobacco shop called Astral Tobacco Shop, or, you know, in French it was Tabagie Astral. And they were the only ones that had them on the spinner racks as well. I mean, whenever you picked them up and rifled through them, the ink would stay on your fingers. So, I do have some Charltons now, but I never got them at the time. They didn't seem... You know, they didn't seem like proper comics to me.
Yeah, I mean, I learned a lot about Charlton from an issue of Comic Book Artist magazine, where they devoted an entire issue to it. And I learned this, and it's hard to make sense of if you don't really know the business. But basically, the comic books were made simply because Charlton owned their own printing presses. And they, if they had these printing presses that were not running, if they were ever down, the company was essentially losing money. Which, again, it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. You're like, well, how is printing something cheaper than not printing something? But apparently that's how it worked. And so the comics were basically used as almost ballast for these trucks. And that's why they kind of look so cruddy, because Charlton really did a lot of cereal box printing, and they were used to doing printing on much heavier stock. Mm. And so the comics were just this sort of little afterthought. In a lot of the ways. And that's, I think that's probably why their distribution wasn't great. I think I read that over the entire United States, Charlton had like 7 delivery representatives. And like, for comparison, DC had 500.
Wow.
So yeah, Charlton just really didn't put a lot of effort into these comics in terms of getting them where kids could, you know, buy them.
And they would reprint runs. You'd get to issue 7 of a title and it would just restart from, you know, reprinting number one through, you know, so you'd have like a 14 issue series that would really only 7 issues. So they would do stuff like that. But maybe in the 60s, they were a little more legit.
Yes.
You know, and I bought some of those comics as modern comics. They were reprinted later, like Blue Beetle and Captain Atom, and you could get them under another imprint. But yeah, so I also don't have much of a history with Charlton or any at all with Fightin' Five, which was basically a war series, or like it was like a commandos kind of team, like the Blackhawks or something.
Right.
And they would eventually lose their spot to Peacemaker. So Peacemaker was their backup as of issue 40, and this is like the second backup. And then they get canceled like with issue 42. And then Charlton comes out with a Peacemaker series, which lasted 5 issues, in which Fightin' Five were the backup. So,
wow.
Yeah. he is Charlton's comedian, right?
That's right. That's right.
So let's describe this panel. Panel 3 from page 25 of this comic. You want to do the honors, Rob?
Sure. It's the background is mostly blue. We're up in the sky here, and there is a jet that is exploding. And there is a caption. It says, "It is written that those who live by the sword shall die by the sword. It is particularly fitting for Emil Bork to die in such a fashion." And presumably that is, again, I have not read this comic outside of this panel. Presumably Mr. Bork is inside this jet as it explodes, and shooting through it is Peacemaker. And it's like, if you don't know Peacemaker, you'd think that he is flying through the sky, a la Superman. But Peacemaker can't fly. He doesn't even have any superpower. So I'm guessing he's being propelled by some other force and inserted a grenade or something to cause the jet to explode. Peacemaker, you know, as we know, like to kill people, despite the name. So I'm guessing that's what's happened in this panel, is that, you know, he flung himself into the sky, chucked a grenade, and blew up Emil Bork, and now he's just continuing on his way.
Yeah, well, that's the out of context way to see it. I can tell you the context where there are missiles that Emil Bork sent. Some of the Peacemaker destroys some of the missiles, and the last missile hits the jet. So he dies by his own sword, so to speak.
Oh, I'll go there. Hence the
caption.
Caption. Sure.
Yeah. And Peacemaker, I think, I don't know, he's wearing a jetpack or something. It's not clear. I also did not read the story. I only read, like, I saw the page and then rolled the panel. So I know the context of the page. We're really doing this, like the out of context. What does this panel represent as itself, as a work of art without the benefit of the rest of the story written by, what do I call comics is Roger Corman, Joe Gill. He wrote...
You called me a warhorse. This guy was a warhorse.
Oh, yeah. No, he wrote everything and anything at Charlton. I think once, because we did an infamous episode of Lonely Hearts about a romance comic story in which there was a substantial amount of spanking. And it was a Charlton comic, and it was written by Joe Gill. So we made a lot of fun of Joe Gill and got to talking about Joe Gill, researching Joe Gill a little bit. And I think at one point, I sort of calculated that during his career at Charlton, he would have had to knock out like 3 stories a day for that to make sense.
Oh, man.
Including a Peacemaker story here and the Fightin' Five story, I think. And he is, along with Pat Boyette, the creator of Peacemaker. So he's had one enduring legacy, somewhat enduring legacy out of it. What I like about this, well, you're an artist, so I'm expecting inside information on pencil sizes and how do you think that Pat Boyette actually drew this?
Well, okay, a couple things. I mean, I like Pat Boyette. I always have. Mm-hmm. I like his style. It's very simple. It's very clean. It reminds me of, and I don't mean to compliment the guy in relation to somebody else, but it reminds me of Alex Toth. And it's very simple, very direct lines. Alex Toth famously said, basically the more you can pull out of a drawing, the better it is. Like the more substantial, the more firm footing you're on. If you can take away all the detail and the drawing is still very clear. Boyette wasn't, I wouldn't say in Toth's level, because very few people were. But Boyette had a very simple style. His Peacemaker, you can even see from this tiny panel, he's not like a super overly buff dude. I mean, of course, that was going by the physiques of the time in the 60s, these people weren't – they looked like muscle guys, but not the – you know, I mean, Chris Evans in real life is more hulking than, you know, Peacemaker looks in this comic book panel. I'm amazed at how detailed the jet is. I mean, we see the thing explode. And, you know, there's this big plumes of yellow and orange smoke and it's blowing up from several locations. But then on the inside, there's basically cutaways to the inside gears and all the machinery. And you can really see that Boyette put a lot of effort into this. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in there. And knowing that it was going, this is only one panel of a page, knowing it was going to be reduced down to the size of, you know, I mean, I don't want to say a postage stamp, but maybe like three or four times bigger than that. And then on top of it, printed probably on pretty cruddy paper with pretty cruddy inking. I mean, this is the kind of thing almost that you do for your own entertainment rather than you think it's going to necessarily going to wow the reader, because I don't think the reader is going to see all this stuff. I mean, I have this panel blown up to almost the size of my computer screen and I'm seeing all the detail. But man, I can't imagine if you're a kid, you probably just blew right by this. You're just like, oh, wow, everything's split. And you just moved on to the next page. And this is something that probably took Boyette, you know, probably like, you know, a good chunk of the morning to do.
One of the things that's impressive about artists on war comics is the technical elements of it. You know, doing tanks and cars planes. And you can tell that there's, you know, a lot of reference work going into this, because it's really like you could have easily done just draw the explosion. Now, a lot of artists do that, you know, just the cloud with the rays coming out of it sort of thing. But we're really seeing the plane being deconstructed, like the metal ripping off of it. And so we, you know, exposing the motors and the whatever the insides. So it's an impressive, the panel spans the page. So, you know, it's the same width as the page. So it's a fairly, it's a good size. So he really went out and put a lot of detail into it. Whereas the Peacemaker figure is very simply drawn. You're right. And I like, you know, just you can see the angle of his flight, his trajectory. And he's just this very small figure. And yet he's graceful. He's in a position. He's, you know, he's not like stiff as a board. He's got the knee bent. You can tell that he is relaxed in flight.
Yeah. Yeah, which is why I think if you didn't know Peacemaker couldn't fly under his own power, you'd think that he was, because he does. Yeah, he looks like somewhat with the way Superman might fly with his arms behind his back, like he's just kind of out for a little stroll through the sky. But yeah, we see the tires flying off and these inside panels, and there's all this gear, and there's a chunk of the tail that's been ripped away. I mean, Boyette really got into it. And when I look at this panel, if you take out the Peacemaker part, I could have seen this been the kind of thing that Roy Lichtenstein would have turned into one of his fine art pieces, because he loved doing that. He loved taking a lot of technical comic book panels and blowing them up and then selling them for millions of dollars and never giving any money to the original artist. But I mean, this reminds me of something Lichtenstein would have done. It has that feel to it.
Yes. And, you know, the Peacemaker figure, I just want to go in and manipulate this image a little bit and just put him like upright so that he looks like he's skating, like that parabolic line of flight would be just the ice skate leaving a trail. And then because he's really in that position, it's just, you know, skating along. Because Peacemaker was this guy who was a pacifist, and yet he decided that force was a good tool to achieve peace. So
hence making you not a pacifist.
You know, the ends justifies the means for him, I guess. So so in this, it's Emil Bork or whoever he is dead. His missiles are all stopped, skating along. He's suddenly relaxed. Relaxed, and you can tell he's smiling, even though you can't tell from the tiny size of the figure.
Oh, and I'm sure that the Peacemaker did not think one second about Emil Bork after he landed. That's in the past.
Yes, that's gone. That's done with. It does look, if you look at just the panel, it looks like he's flying through it. He's destroying it with his body. He's Bullet Man or something. Yeah, the perspective is wrong. That would mean, well, is it? Oh, maybe not, because if I look at the cockpit, you know,
I think you're about right. Maybe a little big, but not that far off. No.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess we can take it, if we look at just the panel, we can take it as given that Peacemaker is just ramming through that plane and destroying it, makes it pop. Literally. I like that. From the parabolic angle or whatever, it should be that somewhere below the plane, I suppose.
Right.
Yeah, Pat Boyette to me is, you know, I looked at the other figure, you know, when I look at his faces and what I see kind of like a Ditko-esque, like Charlton Ditko kind of stuff. In a way, I think that reminds me of that almost as if Charlton had a house style. But he's done a lot of work, and that is his own style. He's not aping anyone.
Yeah, it's very unique. It really doesn't look like anything else. Like I said, I compared him to Toth, and there is a lot of similarities there. But Boyette, he was always a star that I recognized very early, and he did a couple of listings for Who's Who. I'm blanking on what characters he did, but I mean, it's very distinctive. It just doesn't look like anything else, really. It's cartoony but also kind of realistic in its proportions. It's very, very, you know, very, very specific. I've always liked it, even since I was a kid.
And you're right, he put a lot of effort in this. It is not just, you know, we could have rolled a very boring panel.
This is huge, yeah,
but we haven't. The randomizer actually gave us people that don't quite believe. I'm still getting messages like, we pick and choose. I'm sorry, I did not pick nor choose in any normal fashion these panels. It's really the numbers that we've given at the top of the show are true, and I don't think I would have thought to pick a Charlton comic.
No, certainly not. When I volunteered to do the show, and then Siskoid assigned me the panel, and he's like, here it is, it's from a Charlton. I'm like, what? I'm like, all right, let's go with this Charlton, that's fine.
Yep, and so we got a gorgeous one. We got a big splashy one. So anything else you wanted to say about this, Rob?
I have a story that's related to war comics. It's not directly related to Charlton, but if you don't mind, I can tell it if you want to hear about it.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, well, this is somewhat connected in that you talked about how much extra effort you probably had to put into doing war comics, because, of course, you had to know how to draw all that stuff. And so this is a story told to me by Paul Kupperberg, who has a very strong connection to both Charlton and Peacemaker, and that he wrote a lot of Charlton comics, and he wrote what is my favorite Peacemaker stories when he guest appeared in the Vigilante series, when he wrote him as a complete insane lunatic. But anyway, he told me this story about that he was writing a war comic for Don Heck. I believe it was a DC war comic. And in stark relief to Don Heck's kind of graceful, almost feminine style, apparently Don Heck was kind of like a Brooklyn kind of these dems and does kind of guy. And this was relatively, relatively early in Kupperberg's career, and he knew that he had been assigned Don Heck to draw this thing. And I think it was like a 1940s war story, like a backup for Sergeant Rock. And apparently he opened up the splash page. You know, his instructions were, you know, 40 tanks come rolling over this hill and, you know, six planes and 1,000. And apparently Don Heck took one look at that script and basically unleashed a series of 4-letter epithets at the writer for who dare assigned him. He's not going to draw all these effing things. And apparently when Paul told me the story, he said he was nice about it. Like, he wasn't actually like screaming at Kupperberg, but he was kind of almost like schooling this young writer of like, I am not going to spend the next 3 weeks drawing this one friggin' splash page, and I'm going to get paid $100 to do. You can just forget it. You get like 3 tanks. That's it. That's all you get. You're not getting 100 tanks, Kupperberg. That's it.
Who knew there was a budget?
Yeah.
There's an effects budget.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you got to figure, this is how long do I have to get this page done? I mean, for the most part, if you're doing a monthly book, you need to be able to get a page done a day. Other than that, if you do less than that, then it's really not worth your while financially. And so I guess you could sort of spec it out and see, well, how long would it take? Oh, my God, it's going to take me 3 weeks to draw 1,000. And, you know, the writer can just write 1,000 tanks come over the hill. That took him 2 seconds, but you got to draw all that. So forget it.
Yeah. And Don Heck wasn't necessarily just drawing one comic a month.
Right. Yeah. He was doing Wonder Woman. He was busy guy. Yeah. I don't know how these guys do more than one page. During my years of having to do pages for assignments, I couldn't do more than one page a day. It would drive me crazy.
Yeah, well, you know, you get through it by telling the writers no.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, thanks, Rob. Tell the people what you're working on right now.
Well, as you mentioned, I have a bunch of shows that are going on right now. I am doing Pod Dylan 3 times a month, and I am doing a bunch of different shows with Shag Works. We do Fire and Water, we do Who's Who, we do Digest Cast. I'm doing Mash Cast. We're in season 2 there. I do Treasury Cast about once a month, and we just started doing Superman 2 Movie Minute to me and Chris Franklin.
Right, so that's back on the sequel.
That's right, we're back on to Superman 2. I don't know what the future holds, but right now we're just enjoying talking about Superman 2.
Great stuff. And I'll let you go back to the margins. We'll listen to a short promo, and I'll come back with your comments well, not your well, maybe one of your comments, but I mean, listener comments on our inaugural episode.
Good afternoon, Mr. President. Sorry I've been away so long. I won't let you down again.
It's finally here, coming to the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
General, would you care to step outside?
It's Superman 2 Movie Minute.
Chris Franklin and Rob Kelly are back to discuss 1980's Superman 2, 5 minutes at a time.
Superman faces his toughest challenge when he squares off against Lex Luthor and three villains from the planet Krypton.
Superman 2 Movie Minute, proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Man, this is going to be good.
And now your feedback on our first episode. Let's do this comment by comment. Really love this comment from James Williams. He says, I know this started as an April Fool's Day gag, but I love the idea of this show. I'm visually disabled and I can't read or watch video, but I was a massive comic book fan for years. Most comic book podcasts are naturally about the stories in comics. Podcasts about artwork are rare and I adore them. Thanks for giving this a tryout. I'll be listening to every episode. So thanks, James. It means a lot to me. As you can see, I've already churned one out, and I think this is going to be sort of an occasional, either to fill a hole in my own podcasting schedule on Canada Day or Tuesday, or just randomly when there's a spot to be filled in the entire network's programming. So usually towards the end of the week, we'll see how many of these actually come out a year. But up to now, it's gotten a great response from volunteers. So it looks good. And I'm glad it can be of a particular service to you. Chris Franklin says, Siskoid, I hear in Hollywood, no idea goes unused. Even decades after their initial development, shelved ideas eventually make it to film. Apparently, the time frame for podcasts is much shorter. That being said, this idea really does work with the new parameters. So thanks, Martin, for those. Fun show, and it's always a pleasure to have Martin on the network. Completely agree. But Hollywood, you know, is likely forever. I personally have a best before date, so I tend to move a lot more quickly. David S. Gutierrez wonders if this is a legit show. And I'll say, well, it's only as legit as anything else we put out, especially on the FW Presents label. Rob Kelly from this very network says, we really spin gold out of air around here. Well done, Siskoid and Martin. Ange tells us that he loves this idea and he loved the panel that we showed. As you remember, it was from an issue of Young Heroes in Love. He says, an amazing choice for a randomizer. This is a great panel showing one image made of many. Hope we hear more of these shows. And Ange made sure of that by volunteering. So he'll be in our third episode. Listen for him. Lizanne Oswald says, impressive podcast, most impressive. Not sure of panel to panel, but the Young Heroes thing sounds like a cool comic. Shocked that they never did it as an indie book. Later, just write more and keep Supes and Scarecrow out of it. It could be a cool image comic. Heck, Futurians started in Marvel, but since Cockrum had a creator-owned thing and made his own indie book with them after starting at Marvel. So, still a cool podcast. I'll tell you, Lizanne, nobody's sure about panel by panel. We'll make the call later when we've tried it out with different ones, and maybe one of these days the randomizer will crap out and give us something really, really cruddy, but hasn't happened yet. And finally, Pragmatic Golem says, for our information, Young Heroes in Love is available on Comixology. So I guess DC made a deal with the creators. Thanks, Golem. You know, whenever we discuss, oh, has this been collected, and we're always thinking, or reprinted, we're always thinking in terms of trade, books that we can have on our shelves. And even though I do consume digital comics, it didn't occur to me to check, especially with the DC app, which has really just dumped a whole lot of comics recently on there. I didn't think to check if Young Heroes in Love was in that batch or was available digitally in the same way. So that's super interesting. And we should think of that, you know, in the future. Have these things been reprinted or digitized and made available? That's also an option. Thank you. And a great option for the people out there listening who thought after the first episode that, oh yeah, Young Heroes in Love, I'd love to check that out. I wish I could find them somewhere. Well, they are on the DC app, so check that out if that's your groove. So as ever, a reminder that if you'd like to do one of these short podcasts, drop me a line and we'll arrange it. You will be handed a comic book panel randomly and we'll put it up for discussion. My thanks again to Rob Kelly, but for now, the panel is opened.